welcome to Saturday Morning Cartoons, the weekly podcast that revisits, reviews, and ridicules some of the world's weirdest animated series. Coming to you on behalf of MTV's Liquid Television, I'll be your host, Dave Trumbore. Joining me, as always, from the nation of Monica, it's Sean Paul Ellis. How are you, sir?
David. I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Oh, doing pretty good. Also with us, the envoy from Bregna himself, Matt Barron. How's it going, Matt?
David, I'm copying exactly what Sean says.
Oh, it seems like you two might have kind of a love-hate relationship going on tonight.
How? Oh, I see where you're going with
see
this one.
Where am I going with this one? I don't know. I'm just pointing out the
obvious.
You'd be talking
about the love-hate relationship between Trevor Goodchild and Aeon Flux.
Oh, yeah, let's go with that. Let's go. Like, I planned that. Aeon Flux. That's what we're talking about.
Did you really not plan that?
No, I totally did. Totally did in that okay. One. I've been taking lessons from Sean and his improv class, so there you go. Did I pass teach?
Yeah, you got it.
Ringing endorsement from Sean Paul Ellis.
You did it.
Yeah,
you did it.
You did a thing.
You did it, buddy.
Wonderful.
So proud of you.
I'm going to let Sean take the reins here. He's going to talk about a little bit of, I'm sorry. Matt's talking about history tonight. I'm jumping a gun. It's Matt's turn.
Yeah,
anytime.
So, Aeon Flux was an avant-garde science fiction animated series. It was based on both film and comic book, but the experimental version viewed in 1991, like we said, on MTV's Liquid Television, as an animated show. And it was created by Korean-American animator Peter Chung. And I mean, without getting too much into it, I thought it was amazing, but the art was unbelievable. So, yeah.
Yeah, we can talk about the art, too. We'll get into that, because, I mean, it is striking. It is very unique. You can definitely see Chung's influence on this. We can talk about him a little bit, since we're in the history. He worked on Ralph Bakshi's Fire and Ice in 1983, kind of. We've talked about it before. It's kind of half animated, but it's a rotoscope style of animation. So they filmed it live with live action, live actors, and then kind of, I don't know how to explain the process of rotoscope if you're not familiar with it, but basically just, it's kind of like just drawing over the people's motions and movements and making them animated in that fashion. So that's why it kind of looks realistic, but also kind of has like a weird animated cartoonish kind of quality to it. But you can definitely see that influence in Chung's later work. We actually talked about him before. Do you guys remember what cartoon series we watched?
Oh, my gosh. Boy, do I.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, he did the title sequence for Cops.
Cops. One of our favorites. Yeah, that was pretty cool, which is why I like the title sequence, because he did it, and he's amazing, and it was really good. Yeah.
Yes.
He also did work on the Transformers animated series, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and then probably the most surprising, a lot of work for the Rugrats series. So all the different series that he did, I think he had a hand in. And there's kind of a funny aside. When he was talking about his work on Aeon Flux, he actually said that Rugrats had sort of an influence on Aeon Flux, because Aeon Flux allowed him to do everything that he was restricted from doing in Rugrats, for very obvious reasons, I think. But it's kind of weird to see that, like, you can see some consistency between the two if you really kind of like look and search for it. We'll explain to viewers who are not familiar with Aeon Flux why that is incredibly strange when compared to the Rugrats. This is a tough one to kind of pin down and talk about exactly what it's about. I'm going to turn it over to Sean, who's going to try to walk you through the different installments and versions of this show and how it came about and how that story kind of changed over the course of the seasons.
Sure. So I want to also mention the artwork that Peter Chung used for this, or like the style that he created for this, for another cartoon that I get a glass of water, Mr. Dave.
I'm muted, so the audience probably can't hear that, but you guys can. I do it for the audience. I can't do anything for you guys.
So the artwork that Peter Chung did was inspired by an artist named Egon Schiele, Egon Schiele. That's like the very rigid facial structure design, like very bony.
Yeah, very angular.
So, which is kind of how I fell in love with the show in the first place. was just the, as Matt said, was the, you know, just the fantastic art style that's in this. And so, so the first season of Aeon Flux, as Dave mentioned, this is kind of hard to come up with like a coherent synopsis. The first season was really sort of an introduction to sort of the Aeon Flux and the Trevor Goodchild characters, and sort of kind of a glimpse in terms of what they were going to become later on in season three. And so season one was six individual episodes that were broken up that were that aired on Liquid Television. And so they kind of chart this gun-wielding, leather-clad heroine character that is just killing tons and tons and tons of people. And you kind of see the ambition that is behind Trevor Goodchild without getting too far into each one of these individual episodes. Season two kind of takes place in a sense where it's a series of non-sequiturs. There really kind of seems to be no coherent storyline from any one of the five vignettes other than war. That, and I think another theme tends to be kind of fate and ambiguous endings. And so a lot of times the ending isn't kind of completed. It's sort of, there's a blackout maybe like a second before a final action would occur.
Right.
And it kind of allows the viewer to make up their own mind in terms of what's going to happen. Season one and season two, with the exception of the word no in the first six episodes, there's really nothing.
There's the word plop.
There's no
well. P-L-O-P.
I'm sorry, word plop.
Yes.
There's a
for the purists out there. There's
very little spoken dialogue. The season one, which really has been now assembled, is like one solid like 15-16 minute episode.
Right.
Like that had the word no. And then throughout all of season two, which was these five different like very short vignettes that ranged anywhere from like 3.5 to like 4.5 minutes, there was only the word plop. And so you didn't really kind of get a sense in terms of these characters and what they were doing and who they are and what they were fighting for. You just knew that there was war, and there was war all the time. Season three is when MTV kind of embraced this and gave it sort of a larger, I don't want to say platform. It gave it a larger platform to kind of be able to explore a little bit more of the story that was involved.
Yeah, it was more of a traditional series at that point, I think. Before then, it was just kind of very, like Matt said, very experimental, very short.
Yes.
And then, they kind of turned it into more of a, I mean, as traditional as a show could be, just the platform and the style of it. A little more traditional. I like the fact that I'll let you finish. I just wanted to say that I think it was the second season where they put them all together. Okay. Like she pretty much, spoiler alert, dies in like every little installment in some like grotesque or graphic kind of way. I thought that was interesting because apparently Chung didn't think he was going to go forward and make any more of these. He didn't think he was going to be picked up by MTV of all things. And he just kind of did them as the stories came to him, I guess, and was just kind of like, "Yeah, that was a cool idea," and then just kill her off in some horrific way at the end. I thought that was a pretty cool little aside there.
Yeah, season three is really the first time where you sort of get, I want to say, like a formalized idea of the ambition or the motivation between a lot of these characters. As Matt stated, there's two kind of factions, or there's two kind of cities that are really kind of just neighboring right up against one another. And that is, Monica and what's the next one? It's
Bregna.
Bregna. Thank you. And so, Aeon Flux is an assassin. And she's a terrorist. She's a terrorist. She's a Monican terrorist. And that all of Monica exists in sort of this completely anarchist society, whereas Bregna is the complete juxtaposition of it, and it is kind of and it is ruled by Trevor Goodchild.
Right.
And so you sort of, I keep saying you get an idea in terms of what I know that I keep saying like you get an idea of the ambition of these characters, but it's really hard to understand because like the ambition changes from like episode to episode.
Or even scene to scene. Like you're never quite sure in the early stages, like who they are and why they're doing certain things, but they definitely each have a unique style to how they go about things. One may be very much more like overt in the way that she handles things and just very just bold. I mean, from her outfit to her manner of fighting. To her antithesis of someone who kind of sneaks around and plays more of a political game and is a little more savvy and a little more suave and sophisticated. It's very interesting just visually to see those differences.
Yes.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because when I first watched this, I was like, oh, it's a classic Romeo and Juliet story. You know, the two houses who were at war are, you know, kind of characterized by two people who are the leaders of both houses in some way, you know, come together. You know, I mean, it's kind of stereotypical, but in a new way, you know, it's much more artistically challenged in the way that there is no speech in it. There's no exposition, but it was really interesting to me in that way. 'Cause I kind of saw it like first I was like, oh, kind of copying the standard Romeo and Juliet, but at the same time, there's no exposition. You know, it's all artistically given to you. Right. So you need to kind of draw your own conclusions in that way.
Yeah.
That's an interesting conclusion. I didn't see a Romeo and Juliet parallel to that, but that's an interesting note.
And I can see it now. I mean, it's weird because they layer this show with just so much bizarre imagery and like overt sexualism and just graphic violence too. It's so strange.
That's really what it, like when it comes down to like, I keep saying ambition. And so like the ambition for Aeon, I don't know how you guys felt, but I felt that it was domination, sex, or at least like some kind of like
gratification, satisfaction and gratification. Need. Yeah.
And really terror. Like, I mean, she, in a lot of these episodes, in season three, she is bombing things. She is destroying things. She's trying to expose Trevor Goodchild as being this, this like terrible human being. But at the same time, like she hates him, but she loves him, but she just loves to hate him and hates to love him. Like it's so bizarre. Because Trevor Goodchild, his motivation or like his ambition in this whole thing is really it's more godlike. Like he is interested. Like he is pushing evolution. Like he is pushing technology, and he's really doing it like through like experimentation and manipulation.
On a number of levels, from the very microscopic to the. You know, the nationwide kind of manipulation.
Did any of you guys watch anything from season three?
No, I only remember. So Sean and I believe watched this when it was live on MTV back in the 90s. Baron actually, to our surprise, had not seen this when it was on the air back in the mid 90s. Yes. We're surprised by that. So I only remember season three from whatever I saw when it was on TV. I didn't get to watch it today.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of the stuff that you guys saw in like season one and season two is. Just beautifully done artistically, and then season three, it is the same thing, but with the additional exposition on top of you, it's just like, oh crap! Hold on to your butts, guys. This is about to get weird. Like it is.
Oh, and it is so weird.
I was telling Baron earlier. I watched like four or five episodes. I almost watched every episode.
Yeah, I mean, you might as well. Flux. Yeah, it's good. And it's very engrossing too. Once you watch it, you're just kind of like, what is this? I just want to watch more of it. Yeah.
And so there is a lot of stuff that I jotted down from season three that like I remember watching it when it was on MTV and then watching it again. I was like, oh, my God, how did I miss all this crap?
Well, like, it's because we were like 15 at the time. Like they're not even.
I know. But like I also own this on DVD.
Did you actually find it? Did you get to find it?
Yes, I did.
OK, cool. All right. That's good. Yeah, this one you can actually watch them online. I mean, you can find them pretty much anywhere, but if you want to actually buy them in legitimate means, you can check them out on Amazon. You can either get the DVD like Sean has, and it's pretty reasonable too, or you can watch them just on the instant, kind of instant watch. I will say this, the very first reveal of anything to do with Aeon Flux. Do you guys remember what the very first image is that you see when you're introduced to this show? Because it's, I never forgot it. And everyone that I talk to, if I just mention this name.
Yes.
You know?
Absolutely.
Baron, what was your first introduction to this show when you sat down to watch it this week? The very first scene, do you remember it?
You know, I have to say that my first introduction to this was through Animatrix. So, you know, my introduction to this series was a little different because I already knew the animation style.
Okay.
But there's a very iconic yeah, scene Sean knows what that I'm talking starts about. This entire thing.
You might say it's iconic.
Oh, my God.
Oh, with the, yeah. Okay, yeah.
You dumb. Oh, that was a reach on your part.
It really was. Well, I didn't say fly iconic. That would have just been terrible. Who would say such a thing?
No, you got to feed it to me. Keep feeding it to me.
You got the fly and the eye.
Baby bird Baron as much as possible.
You got the fly and the eye. That's pretty much all I can do for you.
Now, that fly landing on the cheek and then walking up into like the lower eyelash, and then just as a Venus flytrap, just snapping shut on it.
Yeah, and then
and then having her eye roll around its side.
Oh, so creepy.
Holy crap.
Now imagine that. You're sitting there. Okay, you're a kid in the mid-90s, right? You're just watching MTV, whatever, Total Request Live is on. It just finishes up. And then a couple hours later, after Real World and Road Rules, you're just like, I'm about ready to head for bed. Wait, what the hell is this? And this animated fly just flies across your TV screen and then just gets trapped in somebody's eye. And this bizarro kind of, or I don't even know how to describe the music. It's bizarre. It's haunting. It's really kind of spooky. It's different from anything I'd ever heard. So it just grabbed your attention, and you just watched this thing unfold, and you just needed to watch the rest of it just because it was so bizarre. It was also pretty sexy for, like, you know, an adolescent kid in the mid-90s just being like, wow, I don't know what's happening right now. Well, what is this?
The fly eye scene, like that Venus flytrap, I mean, it was so artistic, but it also, like, so totally, foreshadowed the rest of the series about, like, you know, someone who is, you know, it's attractive to, like, someone who is lesser and, but at the same time, it's deadly. It was really interesting. Like, in just that quick, like, 10-second intro, you got such a huge introduction into Aeon Flux. It was really, really interesting. You know, once you see that scene, view the whole first series, and then look back at it.
Dude, Baron's getting all philosophical and deep and analytical on us. I was just a 13-year-old kid that was watching an animated chick's ass hang out of her outfit. That's pretty much it for me. I was like, I will watch this for a while.
I grew up in a pretty conservative house, so I didn't have MTV until 2002, which was pretty much after the fact. But, you know, because I majored in English literature in college, I mean, you know, it's pretty much all analytical from this point on.
Oh, so. Somebody's dropping degrees.
The ivory tower, son.
How's that
How's that pre-dental degree working out for you?
I'm not a dentist.
He's talking to the dog in the background. The dog is in pre-dental school. Yeah. Let's talk about the actual, so we talked about the design kind of a little bit, but let's talk about the characters just in a visual sense, because like I said, it's drawn in a very overt sexual fashion, both, I would say, definitely Aeon Flux, obviously, but also like some of the other characters that come into here too. Would you agree, or would you argue against that?
That they're unbelievably like overtly sexual.
Yes.
Oh my God! I mean, she is partially naked.
This is a softball here, kids. This is a softball. Yeah,
and I watched her like outfit, and I was like, that is some terrible body armor for an assassin. And then on top of that, in the beginning, you know. I guess, about halfway through the first season, there's that, like, pretty graphic, like, ear sex scene.
Oh, man. The sex scenes in this show are like, so weird.
That is anatomical.
Baron brought something up that I want to talk
about. Let's talk about it.
The makeouts in this cartoon.
Graphic.
Like, that are just, like...
An adult situation.
It is, here's the thing. If you watch it and you're just like, is that how, like, because when this came out, I was like 11, 12, and then 15 years old. Yeah. Like, watching this, there's no, like, I, like, at 11, I knew that that's not how you make out with somebody.
No, totally is. You should definitely map your adolescence by watching Aeon Flux and doing exactly what they do. No, you should totally do it.
Terrible.
I had not seen Aeon Flux during my adolescent years, but I can tell you it pretty much went down the same way.
You know, wow, that's intense, man. I wish I partied with you. When I was watching this, I was like,
"Wait, did you just say that you wished you had made out with Baron?"
I said partied. No, if you want to say made out, that's fine.
But
whatever.
You know, there was that weird foot fetish thing at the end. And yes. Dave, nobody wants to be around for that.
No, I didn't get that at all. That made no sense to me. We're getting a little ahead of ourselves with that, but just to say that this show is like overtly sexual and graphic. Yeah.
So there are instances where people are like, where like a Trevor Goodchild character, like is making out with a woman.
Yeah,
and,
he's like a playboy.
He is just full on tongue in her ear. Like he is just like holding it and he's licking it like the top of like an ice cream cone.
Yeah.
It's like a soap.
And
like
not only, and not only that, but it was like,
he is penetrating it.
Nailed it.
Well, I mean, more of a waffle cone, but it's like, it was so not humanly anatomical. It was more like emotionally anatomical, because when you view that scene, you're like, yeah, that's like literally impossible for a human being to do that. Because the guy's tongue was like, I mean, it was like two times longer than
the length of his face, basically. It was his entire head was the length of his face. But
I mean, Matt, you want to come over, I will make out with your ear like that. I will get it done. I will Gene Simmons.
Waiting for the Gene Simmons connection. There it is.
Yep.
I feel like we've mentioned him more times on this show than anything else.
You know, not only am I not going to fly 3,000 miles,
going
to fly 3,000 miles for that.
Ugh, let's kickstart this.
We are really low budget on this podcast.
We are no budget on this podcast.
We're gonna start a lick starter to get Baron.
God damn! Can you please actually
start that? I see what you did.
Get all up in that ear.
Oh God, Dave, let's move on,
buddy. All right, so there are other scenes where Trevor Goodchild is seen like, he is making out with a woman, but he is like licking her teeth, like she's smiling.
So wait, did you see the one? Did you see the one that showed? It was the opening of one of the shorts, I think it was.
Yeah. So he is making out with Aeon, and he opens up like a secret compartment in her tooth.
Well, hold on. Before he even does that, the camera work is from inside their mouths.
It is the angles of the shots they put in this.
Amazing.
Like there are a lot of shots where they are either like from the inside, like internal perspective going out of the human body. So like inside of your mouth looking out at the person.
As you do.
Or there are a lot of angles. Well, I mean like inside your mouth. Like you don't remember your mouth. It's like, that's crazy.
Wait, I don't?
There are also a lot of angles that they have that are like down on the ground, kind of facing up towards the character. Yep. So they kind of seem status-wise, like much greater, much higher in grandeur. And like they seem a little bit more intimidating when they're from that angle. Plus, to play into this, like the sexual nature of this show, like there are just a lot of scenes where it's like a camera angle that is facing up and Aeon is just like crotch thrusting down into it, and you're like, what is going on here? Like,
yeah, or even there's the scene that Sean was talking about with Trevor kind of sucking on this girl's ear like it's a soft serve. Aeon is currently like scaling this building and she's watching this going on. She doesn't assassinate the guy, she doesn't jump in and join them. She stands outside on this kind of like ledge and she has her gun drawn. Do you remember this part? She puts the barrel of her gun through like this random eye bolt that's in the side of the, and she just starts thrusting her gun barrel through this eye bolt and like licking her lips and then just leaves and goes on about her business. It's like these little moments and like, just like, Peter, and Trevor, what is going on with you, buddy? What
like,
are you up
Trevor,
to?
Trevor sees it happen. They're like on a couch in an elevator and I was like, well, that's a fancy ass elevator.
Yeah.
And so they're like, he's like, Trevor's making out with somebody, and as Dave said, like, she is, like, gun-banging through this eye hole.
As she's crotch-thrusting the camera.
Oh, my God. It is, like, it is nuts. Like, it is great. Like, I don't think I appreciated this show to the fullest degree of its like in like examination of like human sexuality, like until I rewatched it like this week. Like,
yeah, and there's so much above and beyond that too. It's not just like a show that's sexual for sexy sake. That's not it. There's actually a lot that goes on to it or into it as far as, you know, how luck plays out, how, like Sean's mentioned, how your ambition can turn against you or work in your favor, how you can feel like you're at the you know, the end of a gun barrel and then end up being the top of a nation, you know, the very next moment, yeah, kind of thing. There's a lot of, like, ebb and flow to their stories and a lot of, like, switching of places. I really liked just watching that first pilot because it was a nice kind of, like, encapsulation of everything. I'd love to go back and watch season three so I can get some more of the exposition and some more of the other characters in there too to see their viewpoints. But man, what a bizarre yet like intellectual show. It's very intellectually stimulating as well.
So
yeah, it really was like one level deeper on a lot of things, yeah, like the art and, you know, just the story. I mean, the lack of exposition, and at the very end towards like season one with like the visualization of like the bug is like that vaccination scene.
Let's talk about,
I mean,
that
was huge. You know, it was weird because you got introduced to it a couple episodes before with like that kind of fractured green look on some folks' faces. But there was absolutely no explanation leading up to it other than like, hey, this is really bad. But then again, it's like the perspective of, you know, the nation you're living in, is this bad or is it something that's not? You know, you had that line of folks leading up to, you know, receive their, you know, vaccination. It was really, really interesting and not explained at all. So it's kind of one of those like food for thought moments in the series.
Yeah. So do you guys want to talk about just kind of like that pilot? Is that mm-hmm. one of the episodes you want to dig into here and just kind of like walk through it? So we can give them a little more of the specifics as far as like putting everything in order about how this stuff kind of pans out. Because like they've said, there's no real exposition. You kind of have to figure it out as you're going along. There's a lot of weird kind of wacky stuff, kind of stuff that makes you shake your head and laugh. But then there's a lot of deeper stuff, especially in the last few scenes of that episode. Yeah. Well, like I said, you're introduced with the fly landing in the eyelash. Pretty much the very next thing is just like this scantily clad woman in like a fetish, like an S&M kind of leather outfit, just blasting away at these faceless guards, for the most part faceless guards with machine guns. Now, everybody in this world has guns. Only a few people were ever trained how to shoot them, because it's very much, it's just like a, you know, a G.I. Joe kind of thing where like, it seems like nobody can hit anything except whether you're the central hero or central villain. That's it. Then you can hit with every single bullet. You know, yeah. What?
I'm not going to hit anything. I'm just going to go home.
I'm just going to fire all this ammo and just go home, call it a day. Yeah. So it's one of those things. It's like she kills everybody with every shot, but she can stand in a circle of like 50 dudes with machine guns and every single shot misses her. So that was just kind of like, okay, I know we're going for that like hyper violent, not very realistic kind of stylized action kind of thing going on here. And it was cool. I mean, they played it up huge. I mean, there's literally piles of dead bodies floating and in some cases drowning in their own blood about halfway through.
Yeah, not to mention the ankle deep blood pool. Yeah. So
I love that though, because they didn't just like play it there and leave it there to be like, hey, isn't this gory? Isn't this cool? They actually had like these small character moments in between. And you don't know any of these people. You don't know who anybody is. When you see the title Aeon Flux, you don't know that it's like the name of this main character here. You just see these people doing things and you don't really know what's going on. There's one moment where one of the guards who survives this initial onslaught is walking through the, you know, the ankle deep blood pool and comes across another soldier who's like gasping for breath because he's under a pile of his dead comrades, and his face is in the blood, and he is like basically just like drowning on other people's
blood. He's drowning in blood.
Oh my God, other people's blood, because it's a foot deep. And she just, I believe it's a woman who reveals herself, and she takes a gun or his gun and uses it as kind of like a pillow under his head to keep him up out of the blood. So it's like he's supported by the same weapon that kind of got him into that place to begin with. It was just a very interesting moment, and just to remove that from the rest of what was going on in the show is like worthy of a discussion just by itself. And that's like a 10-second little side thing that this 15-minute piece was just full of. There's so many of them. Did you guys, anything else jump out to you guys? Anything like that? Any moments that you took away from?
The one moment I think that's in like the very next scene is, or in one of the next scenes is the whole secret finger compartment.
Yeah, so weird.
That Trevor Goodchild has, like he, so like you see from the very beginning that there's like kind of this like high tower, yeah, or like building structure that's in the background, and there's like a flashing light that's going on inside, right, of it. You don't really know what it is. It just kind of looks like a flashing light, or if like somebody like has like a mirror outside and is kind of like signaling to somebody like in the distance. Anyway, Eon is like going towards this full force.
And just mowing through everyone as she goes. Yeah.
Yeah. She is just killing everything. I think the one scene that kind of like, to me, that was just I just sat there and I watched it and I smiled. Like I had like the biggest smile on my face. Was the one where she uses the other guy as a counterweight.
I'm trying to remember that one.
In order to like, she's like down at the bottom. She runs to this like one room. A whole bunch of like guys are like coming in. There's a guy that's like up on top.
Oh, she uses her grappling hook. Yeah, the show gets bonus points for grappling hooks. Yeah, yeah.
Shoots it into his chest and use him as a counterweight to launch her up
onto like the
next level. Right. And I remember watching this on Liquid TV, and I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I mean, as she's going up, the acrobat that she has now pulled out two more guns, and she's shooting everybody in the room.
And not missing one.
And not missing a single person on her way up. Like, it is amazing.
Dude, and I love that she gets, like, near the top, and one of the guys doesn't manage to hit her, but manages to hit this, like, inch-wide rope and shreds the rope. So what does she do? Yes. And she's, like, hanging in midair. She's, like...
She locks her foot.
Her stiletto heel.
Part of her stiletto boot. Like, her boot into one of, like, the rungs. And then just pulls herself up. Yeah. You were like, oh, no, she's going to die. No.
Nah, she's fine. No problem. She's totally fine. For now. Fine. She's fine for the next 10 minutes or so. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, the Trevor Goodchild thing.
Right.
He has these secret compartments in his hand where, like, he cuts a portion of it and, like, that beetle that causes the
whatever the sickness is,
like,
yeah.
Inside, yeah, is, like, inside of his finger. Or, like, there's another thing where, like, he cuts open a part of his finger and then takes it out, like, with that same knife and then puts it on a cracker.
Yeah, so he takes this bug out, puts it in a martini glass, and then scrapes out bug juice from his finger and eats it on the cracker. Well, I mean, at that point, I was just like, what is happening right now?
Ritz crackers are dead to me forever.
Yeah, dude.
I mean, it's so bad.
I don't know. Have you tried bug juice? You don't know. It could be real good.
You don't know. You haven't tried what's inside. Yeah, you know what?
You let me know.
Good child.
You let me know.
Good child finger bug juice. You don't know.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Could be delicious.
Let's market that. Yeah. It's interesting though because even that, so a super disturbing scene. That reveal isn't until much later in the episode. They do foreshadow it, but you don't know what's coming because you just see, okay, so you see all these dead bodies, you see this pool of blood, and you see one of those weird kind of like X-shaped finger bandages, you know, the ones that go around your knuckles. You see one of those just kind of like floating in this pool of blood, and you're kind of like, well, that's weird. I guess somebody lost their Band-Aid when they got shot full of holes. That's what Goodchild uses to kind of like disguise and to keep that little bug creature in his finger. So they reveal that later on. They show him like a close-up of him putting taking that bandage off and putting a new one on.
Right.
And it's just weird stuff like that.
The entire time, like, in the wake of all of Eon's, like, her kills, they artistically pan over like certain people, and then you like kind of like how there were like those like stills that were like close-ups like in Ren and Stimpy.
Yeah, that's exactly what I remember, especially some of the like hyper realistic or hyper detailed artwork in this reminded me a lot of Ren and Stimpy. Yeah,
there are like these, so like makes sense. I mean, he worked on Rugrats. Rugrats came out around the same time as Ren and Stimpy when John Craig Pelosi was doing that. Yeah. So, I mean, it's this, like, interesting thing where all of a sudden you see, like, these people, and it kind of looks like they have, like, bacteria, like, or what you would look like if you would open up, like, a ninth grade biology book, what they would show, like, a cell looking like.
Right.
Like, it kind of had, like, these green cellular things, like, over top of their skin, and you're like, I don't know what that is. This woman has shot these people anyway, so I guess it really doesn't really fucking matter.
It doesn't matter at this point.
Some dude is staring ominously over a room full of like people who are drowning in blood, putting a bug in his finger.
Well, it was weird too. At this point, you also mentioned
still all like I'm on fucking board with this.
Yeah, and you mentioned like how the camera kind of pans across at one point. So Eon is like having this crazy violent excursion. She occasionally takes like these little mini breaks, and then the camera just kind of like pans across. And like Sean said, yeah, those people that were just kind of like standing in the background, they almost look like a janitorial staff. Like they're just like the custodians of this place. They're just like, what the fuck happened? We got to clean up all this fucking blood now.
Time to make the donuts.
They just look so pissed off. Like, ugh, I thought I was going to leave early today. It's just weird, these little moments, because it's only 15 minutes total. It's weird that they found time to put those things in there. They also find time to put in things like, well, yeah, watching Eon, watching Trevor ear bang this chick, and then gun barrel banging an eye bolt. That's strange. At the same time, they focus on her stepping on these weird little like tacks that are in this.
Hey Dave,
yeah.
I think the gun in the eye bolt thing. Yeah. I think that is in one of the non sequitur, like one of the. It's in one of the season two episodes.
Are you sure? Did I confuse that?
Yeah, because this one she's like on a ledge and she sees Trevor making out with this woman.
Yeah.
And she gets like she kind of like has this moment of like longing,
yeah.
Where like she wants to. I don't remember her using her gun like in that. I mean, if she does, she does.
Oh, she totally does. I don't remember if I thought it was the pilot. I could be wrong.
So, but she she's done it. She's set a pattern up behavior. So good for her. So one of the things that they do that I was reading about with this was that like they really kind of set up this whole idea of fate. And so we keep talking about these specific camera angles. There's a lot of moments where, like, they will focus on something in particular. Right. They will focus on something, like, really distinctly. And it's, like, almost like when you see a horror movie and you're like, why do they keep panning over to the knife? Why do they keep panning? And then the knife's gone. And you're like, somebody's going to get stabbed. like, you know it's coming, you know? And so there's this moment where they zoom in and they focus in on a nail.
Yeah, like these little brass tacks.
Or like a tack.
Yeah. That are just scattered throughout this like air conditioning vent or something that she's walking through. Yeah.
And so like Eon has stepped on one of these and it's in like the heel of like her stiletto, and she gets up to the roof and she sees this makeout going on.
I think, and at that point too, I think she's actually, because the show flashes to like this picture of like this really old, just kind of like melted looking old guy. I think that's technically her target as, like, an assassin. I think that's what they're trying to get across. And then they show that, like, that dude's already super dead. And Trevor has, like, taken over his penthouse suite. And he's just randomly ear-banging these chicks. So that's another interesting kind of angle.
Eating finger goo on a cracker.
Yeah, either one. Eating Trevor's insect finger bug juice.
Yikes.
Trademark.
So she gets up to either
penthouse, you know, or whatever it is, yeah.
Yeah, they like go into this penthouse, and this is where like fate kicks.
Yeah, here's where things take a weirder turn. This was something you just don't see coming.
This is like minute 10 of this, like, yeah. I guess 15, 16 minute like compiled pilot. And you don't see this coming. Like she's, I mean, like, I guess you do. I mean, I guess like
you do in a sense, but not the full outcome of what happens.
It gets, I mean, you understand and you know that she's going to stand up, that she is going to step on it, that this tack is going to cause her some pain, but what happens next is extreme.
I want to know Matt's reaction to this, though, too. Matt, you watched the pilot, right? You watched that 15-minute intro or where they strung all the smaller ones together?
Yeah, I did. And I, you know, I saw that scene and I was like, yeah, that's interesting. What the hell is going on? So, you know, it was, I mean, when she stepped on the tack from like that moment on and then like fell down, like kind of hit the pavement or the roof or, you know, whatever you want to call that. And then kind of went into like that next scene. I mean, that's kind of when it took like a hard left for me into the artistic, you know, we're probably not going to make any more of these kind of realm. Because then, like, the foot sex thing came in, and
well, I mean, but first, yeah. But let's, so what, I mean, like, everything's leading up to this odd foot sex fetish.
Eventually, yeah.
All right, eventually, but like,
yeah, like in a nondescript way.
They escalate things pretty quickly after her
death. It's more like, it's almost like a montage. It's like these quick cuts to these weird scenes that seem like they don't have anything to do with each other until you kind of like step back and try to figure out like, okay, what are they trying to say here? So yeah, she falls. She falls pretty dang far, and she just turns more or less into a splat on the ground. I'm assuming she's still kind of alive at this point, because otherwise the thing that happens next probably wouldn't have happened. What do you think?
I have no idea, man. I kind of feel like she died, so run out of explanations.
Yeah, there's no. I mean, you can interpret it any way you kind of want, but just to tell you kind of what goes on after that. So she's splatted on the ground now after stepping on this tack. Granted, she survived literally hundreds and hundreds of gunshots from armed guards, and then she succumbed to this random tack in the foot that caused her to fall off a building. So it cuts to this weird kind of like control room scene where you see a guy just sitting at a console, and it flashes over to a panel with a bunch of different pictures of operatives that are up on the screen. It flashes to her picture, and it kind of like, what, blinks like red or blinks white or whatever.
Yeah.
And he just selects an icon that more or less just vaporizes her. Just just like instantly kills her. So whether she was dead and they just got rid of the body, or whether she was kind of clinging to life and he just executed her, I don't know. But then the very next scene, if I'm not mistaken.
This is the next scene is that they pan to what you assume is Eon's like apartment.
Yeah, I thought she was gonna like regen or like teleport or wake up.
Yeah, I totally thought that.
Nope, not instead, a
flamethrower descends from the ceiling and burns the entire fucking room.
Yeah.
Like, scorches everything.
Moral of the story here, kids, when you sign your lease to rent a place, double check to make sure there is no flamethrower corollary buried somewhere.
Or just read your lease and make sure there's no flamethrower clause. I mean, that's something to look out for.
Yeah, exactly. So watch out for that. And then it just gets even stranger because she's presumably, I would imagine, super dead. At this point, I was like, okay, is she a clone? Are there, you know, is she a robot? Is there going to just be a lot of her? No, she just kind of like randomly is shown floating out over the ocean. I don't even understand really what was happening there. Do you remember, like, the bits and pieces? Because it happened so fast and just kind of flashed through in a sequence so fast. Do you remember what led up to the foot fetish? Porn tapes?
Like immediately preceding that?
Just how she ended up on these, like, foot fetish porn tapes. It seemed like to me, okay, now that I'm thinking about it and saying it out loud, it seemed like at that point Trevor had won. They do show these scenes of him kind of like climbing to power and being more and more influential because he appears on TV and the people of Bregna kind of hold him up as their leader. Right. And they show him doing like different experiments and being kind of this humanitarian. Meanwhile, they're intercutting it with scenes of Eon very overtly sexualized, like even with less clothes on than she had before, as not an intimidating character whatsoever, not mowing through guardsmen of Bregna, but being
very vulnerable.
Yeah, being vulnerable and dominated and being part of a foot fetish pornography DVD that some random kid can come in a convenience store and buy. Now that I'm saying that out loud, I realize he took that image of her, who was basically his counterpart in the warring nation of Monica, and he just took her down, like completely cut down her personality, her mystique, her everything, just her iconography even, and made her into this like lowly fetishistic subject. That's really interesting that I just kind of figured that out now. This is the kind of thing that when you're watching this show, you're just kind of like, what the fuck is happening? But it's a lot deeper than you think it is.
Yeah. Because visually what you see is like, she kind of just like drops down from the heavens into this like odd shaped stool. And then a blue, like strange heavenly deity appears with like a sea anemone like tongue.
Yeah.
And just like, and just makes out with her feet.
I realize it's propaganda, exactly. I didn't realize that till literally like more or less the last couple of minutes. I didn't realize that it was propaganda. I just thought it was something weird. I didn't put it together that he was using the warring nations icon and demeaning her in order to like hold himself up higher. The real kicker in this is that the kid that walks in to buy this foot fetish porn buys it with money that has Trevor's face on it. And that was the moment that really stuck with me at the end. That was just kind of like, okay, I get your statement now. Like, I see what you're saying. I see what's happening.
Yeah.
And I remind there you, there's actually no dialogue in this. You know, there's no dialogue. You have to see it all play out.
There was 2 seconds where before he drops the money down, I was like, oh, shit, is this like a flashback? And this is like Trevor's kind of like – this is Trevor's like sexual like fetish fantasy. And then when he puts the money down, I'm like, that can't be a younger Trevor. Like his money's on the coin.
Yeah.
Like that's
– no, it just showed like how he – that kind of switch, the flip of fate, the chance of fate and whose ambition kind of like proves stronger. You know, he got to the guy first – and then he just through a weird happenstance ended up being strong enough to climb to power while he knocked her down. I thought that was really interesting, really interesting. And, I mean, that's just the pilot there. That's not even getting into, like, season three. Sean, I want to give you time to talk a little bit about season three since I don't think Matt or I got to watch it. Just so we know kind of, like, what's worth checking that out versus the little more artistic avant-garde kind of stuff that we talked about already.
Oh, man. This is nuts. I watched, oh man, what did I watch? Sorry, I wrote down the names. I watched episode 1, which is called Utopia, or
yeah, I have no idea how to pronounce that.
Deuteronopia? I don't know what it is, but it's Deuteronopia.
Deuterotopia? I don't even know. Dinotopia?
It's color. It's a certain type of colorblindness.
Okay.
Where you can't recognize green or red pigments.
Interesting.
Or hues. And so like this was interesting, and I would watch all of season 3, and I will probably continue watching most of season 3 tonight. This is interesting just because this is your first introduction to Aeon and her talking, and the first thing that she says aside from like the plop that happens with a no, is she looks at some guy and she just goes, tell me why I shouldn't kill you. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of get the sense, but, again, it shows just the ambition of Trevor Goodchild. And like, he has captured the president named Clavius and is storing him in a secret, like cubby hole that's underneath his bed.
Okay.
And he has to wear this. Clavius is wearing this suit where it looks like his body vibrates faster than how we perceive things visually.
Okay.
And so so Trevor has to wear the same suit in order to vibrate at the same frequency so that he can actually see Clavius and speak with Clavius. And you're just like, oh man, like, now he's going to have this like big long conversation with Clavius, who's like kind of like naked in his underwear, like underneath, and he's like hooked up to some machine. And you think to yourself like, oh, okay, like there's this crazy conversation. And then he takes this key out and puts this like this key into Clavius's chest, and Clavius's chest opens up, like his whole midsection, his whole abdominal wall opens up like a ladder. And then Trevor Goodchild climbs into his midsection, which defies physics because there's an entire like corridor, and then there's a giant room that has a bed that's made out of Clavius's insides. All right.
I did not remember this. I need to go back and watch this again.
And there is a like a beautiful, very ornate, like blue dress that Trevor is storing in there, like on a mannequin, presumably for Aeon.
Sure.
And like it is crazy, and it just, you get introduced to a couple of these different characters, and like I want to say that they matter, and I want to say that like you'll see them again, but no, you really won't. Like it's really just this power dynamic between like Aeon and Trevor, and like they are trying to like one up each other every step of the way. This one was funny just because it had the. When they, at one point they rescue Clavius and they set him free, and he has this one line where he says that he's going to be deploying orbital jellyfish. And I was fantastic. Watching it today, as I was watching it today, I just thought, oh, what?
Come on, Obama. Let's get with the times. Yeah. Deploy orbital jellyfish.
There was the one episode, episode three. I remember watching this because this is the one. It's called. I'm going to screw this up. It's the fear of death or the fear of dying. It's a thanatophobia.
Yeah, all the titles are like so just like pretentious, but at the same time, like they actually probably have something to do with the episode.
They make sense given the. And so this was interesting just because there was this dynamic about this couple that lived in Bregna that wanted to make it to Monica. Mm-hmm. And the one woman, I'll never forget this. Like this was an image from this show that stayed with me until I rewatched the episode. And I was like, holy shit, this is great. Where this one woman and her boyfriend are trying to get across to Monica. And the woman gets shot in the back and it destroys one of her vertebrae. Mm-hmm. And Trevor like kind of comes in and helps her. She has these modules or like these antipodals that like she has to like put into her spine, and she throws a switch and it like provides the support or the necessary stability for her spinal column to stay in place.
Right.
But when she takes it out, she can like flex her body all over the place and like move herself around. And it was, I just remember when I watched it today, I was like, this is a great episode. And there's this whole song that Aeon does at the beginning that involves the word danger boy. and it's beautiful to watch. It's really crazy.
This show just sounds like a drug in like half hour form. It's just so twisted and bizarre, but actually like deep, like there's some meat to it too. You can actually sit and just think and philosophize about it for a little while. I want to talk to Matt real quick, cause he hadn't watched this before. I want to know how much he got to check out, if he would recommend it to other people, if he wants to continue watching it and kind of see what's going on. Just from listening to Sean talk, I definitely want to go back and visit the third season, but I want to know what Matt thinks about it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I watched the entire first season, you know, I mean, Sean sent me over the kind of unabridged version of it, but, you know, I mean, the art was very, very striking. The story below, you know, what limited commentary there was, you know, left a lot to the imagination, not in a keep you guessing sort of way, but in a way that was suggestive of, I don't know, like maybe a particular end, I'll say. But, you know, I mean, it was really, really great. I had never seen it before. I mean, it is something that just has flown under the radar for me for a long, long time. But, you know, I mean, the art was great. The animation was great. The story was great. It was, it implied a lot and yet didn't give it to you in the exposition. It was really amazing, I have to say.
That's cool. I'm glad you suggested it, and I'm glad you liked it, too. I'll be recommending this one as well. Like I said, I want to check out the third season. I will definitely recommend the kind of short non sequiturs that Sean was talking about. There's some weird ones that, I mean, they're all fucking weird, but there's one where, like, it's called Leisure, and, like, Aeon Flux is like, oh, my God, that one's so strange. She, like, comes home, her apartment or whatever it is pretty much just vacant. There's, like, one egg-looking thing in the fridge. You think it's an egg. There's, like, a half a chicken laying there. And then she hears, like, this moaning behind her. She opens up a locker, and there's just, like, a dude just eating this egg, just, like, chained to the wall. And she just...
It's Trevor.
Oh, is that actually Trevor?
It's Trevor.
Oh, I just thought it was a random dude. I was just like, oh, okay. That's kind of weird. So, okay, that was Trevor. Chained to a wall, sucking on an egg, and he tries to, like... He, like, reaches out to her and tries to touch her with his, like, egg yolk-coated finger. And she just kind of smiles and closes the door on him. And I mean, it gets so much weirder from that I don't even want to spoil it because, A, you probably wouldn't believe me if I told you, and B, seeing stuff like that, seeing these kind of like strange twists and turns and bizarre creatures and just beautiful animation, if not very like angular and strange, that's part of the fun of the show, is just discovering kind of what comes up next. So I definitely recommend it, whether you check out just the pilot or you go all the way through the end of the third season. Anything else from you guys on these two? We don't really have to talk about Rule 34 with this one because it pretty much is its own Rule 34.
Yeah. I definitely recommend this. Check out episode 9 of season 3. Okay. It's called The Purge.
Ooh.
It deals with this whole idea. Yes. It's bananas. It involves this idea where Trevor is trying to install these like things that look like stick figures inside of people's belly buttons that are called custodians.
Oh, of course.
That takes over their consciousness. There is a scene where they are trying to remove the custodian from this other like crazy terrorist guy that you meet in the very beginning of the episode called Bambara. As Eon is removing the custodian, there is a brain boy who is like in this, they're like in these kind of like rooms, these like boxes, like eating, what looks like a cabbage, but they're eating with a spoon. It doesn't make any sense, but he is singing this, like, he's singing this nursery rhyme that, like, I remember watching this episode and it was so, I don't know. It fucking creeped me out. I found the lyrics and it is cold meat, mutton pies. Mm. Tell me when your mother dies.
Oh boy.
I'll be there to bury her. And like it is said, it is repeated over and over and over again. And every time you see the characters, it goes back to them and it starts it again. Like the zeal that's on the face of each one of these characters is like magnified tenfold. Like they have the most deviously crazy fucking smiles. And it's just this young kid just singing like cold meat, mutton pies. Tell me when your mother dies. And you're just like, oh no. Like it almost makes no sense given the context of the show, but it fits into this just creepy, weird atmosphere so well that you're just like, yeah, that makes total sense given the fact that like the rest of the episode is just bananas.
Well, if you've got kids, there's your lullaby to put them to sleep tonight. So have fun with that one.
Yeah, and it really comes together for me, Sean, with your description of, oh no. Ew. Like that exact
oh no.
Well, unfortunately, we're at about an hour here tonight, so that'll be it for us and Eon Flux. We'll definitely go check that one out, though, because it seems like all of us ringing endorsement from the rest of us. Guys, this is two in a row that we've actually watched, like, a decent cartoon show. This isn't what we're supposed to be doing. We're doing it all wrong.
Well, let's screw it up with next week's
show. We're going to change it up. Hold on there, because we're not going to tell you what's coming up next until we've gone through a couple plugs from the three of us. Sean, are you set up to tell the folks where they can see you in the D.C. area over the next week or so?
Oh, man, can you?
Yeah.
I'm going to be performing at the D.C. Arts Center, or DCAC, in Adams Morgan inside of Washington, D.C. You can see me. I'll be there October 24th and October 31st. All shows are at 7:30. We're doing a show in the dark for Halloween, so bring your flashlights or your cell phones. Make it creepy. Do it up.
Make it creepy. We try to do that every week here on the show, helping us do that. Mr. Matt Barron, do you have anything coming up in the next week or so, sir?
Man, why do you have to introduce me like that? Jesus.
Well,
but I'm going to be after several years of work, I finally
quit.
Achieved what I've really been looking for, but I'm going to be playing the part of a couch surfing asswipe for the next 6 weeks in my apartment. So feel free to hit me up on Twitter. I will get back to you in 7 weeks when I finally look at my phone.
I don't understand what happened. I have no idea what in like the real world has happened. I don't know if he's fired. I don't know if he's on sabbatical. I don't know if he quit. I don't know if he's just working from home. Ladies and gentlemen, I have no idea what's going on with Matt Barron. He's on a train. He's a hobo.
He's
on
hopping the rails. He's hopping the rails.
He's riding the rails, Hobo Joe.
Hoboing it up.
Amazing. Matt will be coming to you from Saskatoon next week. I don't know where the rails are going to take him.
Newfoundland. Newfoundland, my friend.
Oh, boy. That's where the gold rush
what
is.
What are you on, Snowpiercer?
I don't even know what that is.
Oh, you should definitely check that out, too. I need to watch that.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of plugs, here's mine. If you folks want to check out, some reviews for some hotly anticipated TV shows like Gotham, The Flash.
Dude, what shows are you watching?
Let's talk about it again. Gotham. You like Gotham?
Love Gotham.
Do you? Do you like The Flash?
I'm really enjoying
it. It's actually really good. How do you feel about Arrow?
I am happy with the season so far.
I'm happy with the television show. The Walking Dead, Constantine's coming on tomorrow night. Yeah.
Yeah.
So guess what, guys? I review every single one of these shows every single week over at Collider.com. So after the show airs, you can head over there within the hour, check out my review, come on along and say hi. That's pretty much it we got for plugs tonight. Let's talk about some contact info so you guys can get in touch with us if you want to find us. First of all, let's start at the website, SaturdayMorningCartoons.com. Do we have any tags for using you this week? I didn't look any up. Do we have any tags for using you? Because remember, that's morning with a U. And if you know your calculus, that means you plus me equals us.
I was going to say, because you are the best.
Oh, man, come on. I'm at least trying to tie it into, like, 90s nostalgia here. I can't even remember that band.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, boy. So that's Morning with You, kids. You can also find us at Morning Tunes on Twitter. Our Tumblr account, SaturdayMorningCartoons.tumblr.com. Sean's got a bunch of crazy stuff over there. I'm sure with Aeon Flux, it's just going to be full of S&M and leather and foot fetishes and ear fucking and all kinds of weird stuff. Yeah.
Wait, did you say that you did the U plus me equals us and you don't remember the band?
No, I can't remember the band.
It's Together.
Oh, and Together, isn't it?
No, it's Together.
Oh, what was N Together?
Like it's instead of two,
T-O-G.
Like
T-O-G. Yeah, it's like T-O-G.
The number two.
It's a number two.
Plus, yeah. It was... I don't know it, like, I didn't even think
remember
of the calculus
there was...
thing until you told me, but... All that shit was real, real bad.
Yeah, and there was one kid who had cancer. That's all I remember. That one kid from Together. Yeah, he had cancer. Pee-wee, I don't know what his name was. Listeners, if you know and you're like screaming at your radio or iPhone right now, write to us, maybe at SaturdayMorningCartoons@gmail.com, and tell me who the kid was with cancer, because I don't know how to work the Google. Guess what? We're also on iTunes and Stitcher for all your podcast needs. That's about it for tonight. Do you guys know what we're watching next week? Do you remember? Do you read the emails that I send to you?
What?
Thundercats Ho!
No, God damn it. We are definitely not watching Thundercats next week. Next week's our Halloween episode, what? Guys. Come on, get with the program.
Come on, guys.
Damn it.
Come on, guy. We're going to edit you out, Hobo Joe.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, so for Halloween show, we're watching The Real Ghostbusters, and as a bonus, because I'm making you.
Extreme!
Yeah, Power Extreme Ghostbusters. That's going to be fun. I think it's going to be a good time. Hopefully we'll get back to talking about some actually just terrible, terrible shows. Because that's what I'm interested in. Anything else from you guys?
We're on a trend. I mean, Real Ghostbusters. And I mean, I haven't watched Extreme Ghostbusters, but man, Real Ghostbusters.
Ooh, you haven't watched it at all? There's a fat kid in a wheelchair. And he's a Ghostbuster.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, right. Buddy.
Oh, God. Between that and the cancer comment, you know, why don't you just go ahead and send your cease and desist orders over to Saturday Morning Cartoons. That's morning with a U at gmail.com.
There you go.
A
little plug from Baron. So that's going to be next time on a spooky edition of Saturday Morning Cartoons. Until then, thanks for listening. We're going to let Sean take us out today.